Patrick Timpone and Andrew Goss in The Real World of Money. So I had no idea that the Secretary of State can approve these kind of deals. That's kind
They have to approve it. They have to, because this is, you know, is this against the national interest?
Oh, I see.
As Secretary of State, this foreign country wants to buy this. But this connection between Frank Giustra, J-I-U-S-T-R-A, who is the company, Giustra was found everywhere with the Clintons. He was found in Haiti. He was found in Africa. He was found in Canada. He was found in the uranium deal. So everywhere you look, this person, Frank Giustra, who's the founder of Uranium One, and gave the bulk, I think like $130 million of the money came from him. So the smoking gun is there, and there's no way to miss it. I mean, you'd have to close your eyes to not see it. But yet we don't think, Congress doesn't think that this is worthy of the sort of attention that they've given to Mr. Clinton's, Trump's
ties. The forces that are entangled with the Clintons,
they
must be huge to be in, have this much juice in Congress.
Absolutely.
It must be huge.
And it explains, you know, all the feuding now. We've got, Senator Bob Corker, Republican senator, he's decided he's not running.
Well, yeah, because he's going to lose.
Well, of course he's going to lose. He's been revealed. And others. And
there's
and
another guy that came out, and he was making this, who's this other guy?
Yeah,
this other Republican. So President Trump tweets, well, good, because he's a loser. He's going to lose. That's why
he quit.
He's going
to lose anyway. That's why he quit. Jeff Flake,
He calls him Flaky Jeff.
Jeff Flake from Arizona. Yeah. Well, and I'm not surprised. You know, you've heard, of course, I mean, I regret that he's ill, but John McCain has certainly kept himself quiet over the last several months, because if we look twice at him, we'll realize quickly he's not a Republican at all. Who knows what he is?
Well, I always remember my famous, President Trump's famous tweet during the election. I kind of liked it. He said, I don't think if McCain was really a hero. I mean, he got caught. That's terrible.
What he said was, what about the people that didn't get caught? Aren't they heroes too? That was it. The insinuation was that John McCain wasn't a war hero. Oh boy. The local chairman of the Republican organization here in Bergen County, the BCRO, and I got into a major disagreement over this very point alone. He refused to give Mr. Trump the party line in Bergen County, because he insulted John McCain, a war hero.
I
quickly dealt with that. John McCain was pushed onto the back shelf, and President Donald Trump was given the Republican line here in Bergen County.
Here's an email for you. Has Hillary Clinton approved Russian deal, the 20% of USA's uranium reserves ever been rescinded? Or did the foreign ownership stand?
Of course, it stood. Yes.
Really? So
they own it today. Yes, that's right.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow. Is that a crime?
No.
It would be a crime if they could prove pay to play.
A quid pro quo.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But even if you go to Snopes, They'll shoot it down for you. That's false. They'll tell you that's false. You know, Snopes, the internet truth-seeking entity, would tell you that, there's no proof. That's not a proof. Mm-hmm. Just because the chairman of the company and the number one stockholder of the company gave $150 million to the Clinton Foundation doesn't mean that Hillary did this for that reason. You know, she thought it was a great idea.
Mm-hmm. Patrick Timpone, Andrew Goss, it is The Real World of Money. Let's get back a little bit to the first thing that we talked about and see if we can give our listeners around the world some ideas of what they can do or not do, or what they should be doing or what they should be thinking about. What's your favorite term about the impeller and the caca? How did you say that?
The defecation impinges upon the rotary oscillator?
Yeah, the defecation impinges on the rotary oscillator sometime this year or next year. Let's do a little clip here so you can have some more sulfur, just a minute or two from one of your fellows that you have a lot of respect for, Jimmy Rogers, legendary investors, on what he thinks about this possibility of the, you know.
We're going to have the worst bear market of your lifetime, of my lifetime even, next time around. Whether it starts this year or next, and it'll probably start next year, if not this year, it will be the worst of your lifetime. Because in 2008, we had a pretty bad bear market, but there's too much debt. The debt is much, much, much higher now. In 2008, the Chinese had a lot of money saved for a rainy day, and they started spending it when it rained. Even the Chinese have a lot of debt now. So there's nobody left to save us. Equity evaluations in America, there are some. There are a few stocks that have gone through the roof that people buy every day, no matter what. But many equity valuations, especially if they're not in an ETF, are pretty cheap. Not cheap, but compared to the ones, the FANGs, for instance, there are many stocks that are not vastly overpriced in the U.S. Would I buy them? No, because when the FANGs pop, then everything is going to go down for a while.
Doesn't sound too promising. What are you saying here?
The FANGs, Facebook, Apple, Netflix, Google.
Oh, is that what
the
FANGs
are? The high-flying tech stocks. Mm-hmm. And he's right. Once they crack, whew, man, then
so
everything goes
they,
with
they're
them.
Not part of the S&P, are they?
The NASDAQ.
NASDAQ, right.
Right.
Okay, they're on the NASDAQ. But they're not part of the ones that control the price on the S&P?
No.
No, they're different. They're separate. Yeah. But the FANGs, if they start cracking there. So this market, S&P breaks the all-time record, 241 trading days without 3% corrections, which goes back to 20 years, over 20 years.
That's right.
Boy, that's pretty curious when you think about that. Mm-hmm. So we definitely have ourselves a big, big old bubble.
Mercy sakes alive.
Mercy
sakes. Looks
like
we got us a bubble.
We got us a bubble. So how do our listeners protect ourselves from this? Do you want them, if you were a financial advisor, but you're not, so just say if you're just talking to them over a cup of coffee, would you be...
Move to the sidelines.
Move to the sidelines, getting people out?
Yeah, go ahead and sell your stocks and sell your bonds and put your money into short maturity securities. Now, that's, of course, if I'm not Andy the coin dealer.
Sure.
Because Andy the coin dealer says, heavy up your...
Buy some coins.
Yeah, heavy up your gold portfolio. You know, add some gold to the portfolio.
Mm-hmm. But would people get out... of course... I was about to ask, would people get out if they were in some stocks that are really well valued and they don't think they're going to take a hit if this thing explodes? But I guess most don't know where even the money market,
They know where their money is.
I was trying to thank you with that. I didn't get it out. They don't know where their money is.
That's correct.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. You know, I have people call me all the time. This is my favorite one. So you invest in anything now? Yes. Well, what do you invest in now?
They're all safe.
I have a 401k.
Uh-huh.
What's in your 401k? Oh, I don't know. You don't know what it's invested in? No. You realize the 401k is just the vehicle. You have to put something into the vehicle. What's in there? I don't know. So this is unfortunately.
It's just the vehicle.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like a car. Is the kids riding in the car safe?
Right.
Which are the stocks?
There's kids in the car?
Yeah. Whatever. Yeah. So if you were in, would you be getting out if you were into the FANGs, the Facebook, Apple?
I most certainly would. Really? I would sit to the sidelines, especially, you know, we're already hearing the disappointing news on Apple. Right.
Yeah. iPhone.
Yeah, yeah. They're getting problems here and problems there. Mm-hmm. And if you believe in Jimmy Rogers, which I do.
Yeah, he's pretty cool.
He's a sharp guy.
Yeah.
And if Jimmy Rogers says he's concerned and that if these FANG stocks break, then they're going to take everybody else with them.
Mm-hmm.
I would be concerned if I were an individual investor.
So you're saying
stocks.
You would be safer on the sidelines. You're not going to be making any money.
Right.
But who cares?
Right.
You're going to protect whatever
your principal.
Protect whatever you have.
At least until things settle down. Yeah. You know, you have so many people talking about this impending event. You know, it's
sure.
Not just,
I mean, boy, there's a lot, too.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of folks.
Yep.
Yeah. So there's something going on.
Something going on.
With all the debt.
Don't know what it is.
Yeah.
Can't see it.
And Andrew, the more you look at China, and I don't understand most of it when I read it, but it's pretty weird. There's such a big player in this thing. I saw a thing yesterday where China's government is going to be buying 25% of all the residential real estate for sale.
Right.
I mean, what? So they're going to print yuan,
right?
And then buy 25% of the real estate in China.
Right.
Imagine how much that is, just to keep the
prices up.
Just to keep the prices up.
Well, they can do that.
Now, how
does
that affect
their own central bank?
Yeah, they own their own central bank, so they don't even have.
They don't
have interest. They just crank up the yuan machine, which is a Dell 58504G computer, I think. One of those.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, how does this intertwine with the? All the people listening and what they own, their stocks or bonds or dollars or
well, necessarily, we're all of our currencies are intertwined.
Mm.
So what affects the Chinese yuan affects the U.S. dollar.
Just does.
There's no way to avoid it. They used to say if Europe sneezes, America catches cold, or vice versa. So, I mean, this is the way it is. We're an interconnected financial world in which both the Federal Reserve and the Chinese Central Bank buy each other's currencies in swaps.
Yeah.
So it's not a one-time thing or a one-off thing or accidental thing. It happens quite regularly and on purpose.
But you've been teaching us in this study every week for, 10 years, that the idea of fiat currency and be able to create more dollars by the Fed and Treasury borrowing them can keep the thing going as long as they don't run out of zeros, right?
Right.
All right, as long as you don't run out of zeros, and then that is going to put pressure on the dollar value. How does the dollar value going down on the USD affect our listeners' nest egg?
That's easy to see, or should be. Let's say you had a dollar in the bank at the beginning of this year when the U.S. dollar index was like at 102, right?
It was.
Yeah.
We talked about it. It was flying high.
Yeah. And now the dollar index is where?
Look here, 93.74.
Let's call it 94. You know, that's your dollar from the beginning of the year is worth 94 cents today. So unless you made 6% on your money, you didn't even break even.
Well, that's not good.
No.
Unless you made 6% on your money, you didn't even break even.
That's right, because if you earned 6%, you only got to keep 4, right, because of taxes.
And not a lot of places to safely make 6%, is there?
No. Huh. No, the risk that you have to take these days to make 6% sort of makes you wonder about a return of principal instead of a return on principal. These folks folks that are making 6 or better are really taking the sort of risk that I don't think they'd be comfortable with if it was spelled out to them. Mispricing risk is sort of the theme, right? I mean, people are just not pricing their risk right.
Yeah. Now, you could have made 6% buying Bitcoin or Venezuela treasuries.
That's right. Right? Especially Venezuela treasuries.
Especially Venezuela. Well, you would have made 6% buying Bitcoin.
Oh, goodness, at least.
Yeah,
it depends when you bought it.
Yeah, when you bought it. I mean,
right.
Yeah, when you bought it. Did you see, this was hilarious. I don't know what, the Saudi prince was being interviewed by some local people, you know, and in New York. I guess he was in New York. And he goes, Bitcoin is like Enron in the making.
Yes.
And Bitcoin went down $300 when he said that. $300.
Yeah.
But it went back up.
Sure it did.
Boy, you talk about volatile. It's just nuts, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just nuts-a-rooney.
That's right.
Okay, speaking of Bitcoin, I finally given in and bought some Bitcoins from Jason. I've been one of your listeners during the ongoing Bitcoin interview you did many, many, many years ago, but didn't invest in it because of the Mt. Gox thing. Oh, that's the interview I did in 2010.
Sure.
It was 25 cents, remember, with Bruce Wagner.
Mm-hmm.
Seemed a bit risky back then, and just didn't do it.
Now it's 6,000, you're jumping in.
No, well, okay. Then you keep discussing Bitcoin during your shows over the past years, but Bitcoin wallets were disappearing as fast as you created them. And again, lot of people lost their money. But now the wallets and exchanges are far more solid, so I invested.
Oh, yeah.
It was remarkably easy as I registered with Coinbase.com. Yep. Only took a few minutes to buy the coins, transferred them from my external ledger wallet. It's similar to the USB stick by copying and pasting the Bitcoin address that the wallet issued.
Right.
Now I intend on buying using Bitcoins for the transaction, some gold semi-numismatic coins online from trusted dealers with my Bitcoin profits. What do you think about all of this?
Crickets.
All right. Okay. Crickets from Andrew.
Crickets.
All right. 888-663-6386. Here's an interesting thing. I kind of like this fellow. I don't know. Do you know Charles Hugh Smith?
No.
Okay, Charles Hugh Smith, pretty cool guy. He argues that the United States government will not stop buying bitcoins because the people who control the USG are all in and won't let them do it. He says the top 1% of people own 36% of all assets. The 99% of people in this country compared, they own 38.5. Wow, is that possibly that the top 10% own 77% of all assets in this country?
Mm-hmm.
Is that possible?
That is indeed
holy camoly. He said these are the people that are investing in Bitcoin. He said the top 1%, they get about 24% of all the income, and the 90 to 90% gets 26%. So 50% of all the income is in the top 10% as well.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa. So the likely buyers of Bitcoin is enough to keep the thing going.
Those are the likely sellers of Bitcoin.
They're the likely sellers of Bitcoin as well, right?
Yeah, because you know the pump and dump is no good without the dump. So anyway.
Well, I still think that what we talked about a couple of weeks ago, I think is a really possibility that the boys have been in this thing from the very beginning, and it's going to be a bait and switch, fastball in the dirt, and it could end ugly. But I don't know.
That's my view as well.
Is it?
Yep.
Okay, can we quote you on that?
You can quote me on that. I'm just not comfortable storing my wealth in this sort of an asset.
It's hard enough
to get me to store it in dollars.
Dollars, much less.
That
Bitcoins.
Are electronic.
Right.
Or you know, not real. So, yeah, exactly.
But you can certainly see how our listeners like Jason and other people, they read about this stuff and you read about all these profits.
People making so much money. You know why people are buying Bitcoin, right?
Because
it's going buying, up, man, because it's going up.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about your business selling gold and silver coins, numismatic coins. What about this 6%? Let's ask you a question here, and I know you give me an honest answer. What if people bought $20 Gaudens, say, a year ago? Would they have made 6%?
A year ago?
Gee, maybe not. Well, I don't know. You tell me.
Yeah, maybe not. I don't know. That doesn't sound... No, I don't think so. I think for the last year, we've been stuck in a trading range between 1250 and 1300, right? Although for a minute it did reach the 1380, looked like it was going to break 1400. So, you know, it's all about when you bought it and when you sell it. But that's not what you buy gold coins for.
Oh, it's not?
Right.
Oh, wait a minute. I thought you just bought them to make money.
You stack them up, man. You just stack them up.
You're a stacker.
That's it.
So that's what you recommend your people do is buy some numismatic or something that makes sense for them and their portfolio.
And then go about your life.
And just go about your life. Just keep buying.
Yeah.
Just
stack them.
Uh-huh. And what's your argument why 5 years from now, if you had to liquidate, it would be, one, easy to liquidate, and two, you'd be happy that you bought them?
Well, that would be the $6 trillion budget deficit. Yeah, you can count on the federal government continuing to run these enormous deficits, which will lead to the creation of additional money. That's it.
We can kind of count on that.
That's
right?
Something
everything
you can
count we
on.
See out there, we can count on. The only tools in their toolbox is to get more
create more money.
I mean, that's it.
They just don't know any other way.
And whether or not you buy or sell gold coins, I mean, that's just a fact,
right?
Okay.
That's why I buy and sell gold coins, not the other way around.
Mm-hmm. And what was the other one I asked? Why would it be easy to liquidate?
Of course it would, yeah. The thing about Bitcoin is I don't even know that it'll be here in a year. You know, this is the problem. Longevity in the numismatic market, at least in the gold market, is like 5,000 years of history. In the numismatic market, I mean, you know, there, well, mm-hmm. goodness. Mm-hmm. There are quite a few numismatic people in this country and in the world.
So the question comes up a lot that when things get really weird, why would somebody want to buy my coin?
Why would somebody want to?
Well, I mean, you get that email
because,
a lot, right?
Well, yeah, because they're holding worthless dollars that are losing value every day. And if they don't buy your coins, they're going to watch their money, the value of their money, just dissipate. Mm-hmm. So in that environment, it seems that more people are trying to buy coins than any other time. So.
Oh, because you're just kind of saying, I need to get into something that makes sense here.
Yeah.
So solid, you know.
Right,
I can get
right.
my little grimy hands around. Put in my underwear.
Something
drawer.
Real.
Uh-huh. Yeah. What are you hearing from your customers? I know you all have two offices, Hilton Head and Hawthorne, New Jersey, and it's
Correct.
Called SDL.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you talk to customers and you have long time people that work for you. What kind of concerns do you hear from your customers? I mean, what are you hearing out there?
Well, that the inflation rate is just not what it's reported to be. Especially my customers that receive Social Security are seeing, you know, 1% and 2% increases in their pay.
If that.
But 8% and 10% increases everywhere else in all the prices that they pay.
Uh-huh.
So this is the thing that I hear the most, that their money doesn't quite reach the end of the month.
They see it. I mean, they feel it.
Yeah, they feel it.
So you feel like a numismatics are one of the best hedges against inflation.
That's right. Yeah, if there was something better, I would have no trouble going over there. You know, like I could convert this apparatus into selling something else entity. We've been doing this for going on 40 years now.
Hmm.
And if there was something better, as I tell my people all the time, my customers and my associates, if you find something better than gold and silver coins, please tell me what it is, because I'm open-minded. I'll certainly take a listen.
And what's your long-time argument, Mr. Andrew Goss, of why you like numismatics over, say, a 10-ounce bar of silver or a big thing of gold? What do they even sell
well, that
gold
was
in
the,
chunks?
That was the manipulation discussion that we had. Right? So what if at the moment that I want to sell my gold, there's a tremendous manipulation going on? That you can't do that with numismatic coins.
Like
you
the $2 billion that happened this morning.
Yeah, exactly.
Somebody could they could get a George Soros or the plunge protection team or the central banks.
Correct.
And drive the price down.
That's right.
And why doesn't that affect St. Gaudens or
because there are no
coin?
Contracts or options or futures.
But why doesn't it affect the price of those if the gold price goes way down?
It does in the short term. But in the long term, ultimately, in the longer term, yeah, you don't have to worry.
Uh-huh.
Because the underlying forces that were driving the price of gold up continue. They don't stop. So whether
it'll go back.
That's right.
Yeah, it always does.
It just has to, like water seeking its own level.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So say we're 1276, something really weird happens, and gold goes down to 800, 900.
Not happening.
Not
happening.
Okay, let's just say it does.
Let's just say it
does. Does the value of someone who purchases a $20 St. Gaudens today, does it go down proportionately in value?
Not usually. The difference between a manipulated drop in the future price of gold
mm-hmm.
and a drop in the current price of gold, I've seen gold drop $20 or $30 and didn't affect the St. Gaudens at all. So
you were still selling them for the same thing the next day.
Correct, and still buying them.
And still buying them. More importantly, you were buying them.
Yes, and that's because in my market, you know, you can't create St. Gaudens for the future. You have to.
You could, but you'd go to jail.
Yeah, that's very good. Right. They'd never make it through the grading service.
Uh-huh, yeah, yeah. All right. Okay. That's a little primer there on gold and silver. And everything that you sell except for the currency silver is in these, all been graded by NGC and the containers and all of that.
Yeah, that's right. You should never take the dealer's word, for the grade and authenticity of a coin that you're buying from them.
Mm-hmm.
That's just a recipe for disaster right there.
Somebody wants to talk to you. How do they do that?
Well, they just call the 800 number, 800-468-2646.
There you go. 800-468-2646. If you are interested in increasing your protection of your little body and your little baby's body and your little doggies and cat's body from electromagnetic fields in the form of cell phone towers that may be flying around your bedroom or your kitchen, and you can see what kind of juice you have. You don't even have to buy a meter like we have. The good meters for the RFs are about $250. We bought one some years ago. You can just go to antennasearch.com, antennasearch.com, put in your address, your zip code, and they show you every cell phone tower, where it is, the strength of it, that the not necessarily the strength, but the height of it. It gives you a pretty good idea. And you can see what kind of things are coming in. And these are things you really can't feel. But we think that they do affect the body in some way. They could be dampening the immune system. They could be causing you sleep issues, all kinds of things. We don't know. I'm not going to get, dark here, but, me, I don't believe that anything will hurt you if you don't allow it. But if you'd like to just, trust in God, but also tie up your camel, as we say, and you have a little investment, we'd like you to consider this cool device. It's called the Blue Shield. You'll see it right on the front page. It's a great ad, beautiful, 10% off in red. And this thing works. And this technology is real. It's been authentic. I mean, lots of science behind it. Brandon Amalani, who I trust a lot, I've known forever, long time. He used to work with Daniel Vitalis. He is the sole distributor of this product. And they have several different things that works right on the body. Just a little cube, you can see it. You set it on the counter somewhere, you plug it in, and I think it goes 300 yards, something like that. I should really know that exact. But anyway, it'll blanket you and help you sleeping and everything else. 10% off, promo code ONERADIO, and check this out. It'd be a good investment for you, I think. But what do I know? But also, they also have a little a personal guy that is about as big as a credit card, and you just charge it up with a USB on your computer. Once you charge it up, it lasts about 2 weeks or so. So when I run outside in my little Prius, I like to have that in my pocket because I'm getting banged around there, and Doodle and I are covered because it goes about 10 feet. And also then 5G, which is everywhere now, it'll help protect from that. So you may as well, if you have the money, if you want to invest in your health, check this out. It is called Blue Shield, right on the front page of OneRadioNetwork.com. Here's a product that is on sale for 10% off. Same promo code, OneRadio, right now. Daniel Vitalis, this idea of colostrum being really good for the immune system, tell us a little bit about that.
Well, the thing about colostrum is that it is developed in the blood of the cow right before it calves, and it's developed so that it can format the immune system of its calf. It's pretty important to understand that a calf would have no immune system if it got no colostrum. So it's pretty well understood that if you deprive a calf of colostrum, it's going to have a failure to thrive. It might even die. Now, human beings are a little bit different. We can survive without our mother's colostrum, but we never are going to have a fully intact immune system. But the important thing to remember is that we're living in an era where there's more people alive today with dysfunctional immune systems than ever before. And colostrum gives us the ability to actually restructure, rebuild, and reformat our immune systems so we can really thrive in our modern world today.
Explore, research, and order all of Daniel Vitalis' products clicking on the Surthrival links on the front page of OneRadioNetwork.com. And once again, everything with Surthrival on sale, promo code OneRadio for a limited time, just the next 10 days or so, something like that, through the 7th, whatever that is. promo code One Radio, colostrum, the new product, aphrodisiac kind of thing for you and your significant other. It would be called Taboo. Then, of course, pine pollen, elk velvet antler, shaga rishi, and the new Yopan tea, which I had yesterday. It's really good. It's one of the only indigenous caffeine plants in the United States. So if you like to buy local kind of thing, rather than getting your little caffeine buzz from Venezuela and other parts unknown, and you don't know where it's been, this Yopan tea is pretty cool. And it's a nice kind of little lift in the morning, but they have plenty of the antioxidants, things that you get from green tea, but also a lot less kind of the wire effect that the coffee can do if you drink too much of that. So these are all great products from Sir Thrival, and you can get 10% off. So there we are.
We talk about your health, wealth, and well-being on OneRadioNetwork.com.
Yeah. There you go.
It's the Real World of Money with Andrew Goss. Once again, here's Patrick.
And once again, I've known Andrew since the early 90s. I remember the first time I called you.
Well,
I do. It was about 93 or 94. And I called you up and I said, I just saw you on TV when I was in New York and you were interviewed and you were talking about the Federal Reserve as prints money and what? And it was just like, it was like you just told me, you know, Santa Claus doesn't exist, you know, that kind of thing. It was,
yeah, and Tony Brown, God love him.
Pretty fun.
So he's the only one that had the guts to put it on the air.
And they fired him, didn't they?
Right after that, yeah, he seemed to have lost his job after that. But I've spoken to him years later, and he said he didn't blame me.
Yeah.
Because after all, I did warn him, you know, I did.
You told him that.
I told him, man, you shouldn't be talking about this.
Yeah.
You really shouldn't let me on your air. But he did. He didn't care, man. He sat there with the U.S. note, you know, tell me what this is, and tell me what this is, and tell me why this is different.
I saw that.
We showed a picture of a U.S. note, and wow. I mean, nobody let me do that before. I tried to do it with, what the heck is that guy? Peter Jennings. The other famous host that was a news host when the new $20 bill came out. And I brought a U.S. note with it with me to the set and started talking to him about the U.S. note. And he's like, oh, no, we don't want to talk about that now.
Yeah,
we're going to stick with the new $20 bill. That's what we want to talk about.
Yeah. So that's actually one of the conjectures with this film you're working on and the idea of McKinley, Kennedy. Many of the people believe, and I think you're one of them, that's part of the deal why they were also assassinated, because they started printing stuff out of the treasury.
Who benefits?
Yeah, who benefits? Without borrowing, cutting out the middleman, which is the private New York Fed owned by who?
Yeah.
Citi, Goldman Sachs, the rest of them, Wells Fargo.
Yeah, and so for me, it was the speeches and the early essays of Mark Lane that, you know, I started with the Kennedy assassination. So, and then after the Kennedy assassination, then I got into the Lincoln assassination. And then, of course, naturally, 1880, Garfield. You know, why? What went on in Garfield's day financially dealing with money? And sure enough, every one of these presidents, you know, William McKinley signed the Gold Standard Act. He was... He's the gold standard guy, and on the other side of the coin, no pun intended, was William Jennings Bryan, who said, you're not going to press down upon mankind with this thorn of crowns. You're not going to crucify us on a cross of gold.
No.
We don't want a gold standard. But anyway.
So it was the same thing where, of course, President Lincoln, he created greenbacks, right?
The first ones.
And there was a Federal Reserve at that point.
Sure there was.
And there was also,
Lincoln did not have a Federal Reserve. No,
oh,
forgive
he
didn't. No, well, what he had was a banking cartel.
Same thing.
They organized as a cartel. They had the New York Clearinghouse. And, you know, they had certainly interspersed amongst themselves, people, and mm-hmm. cooperation. Mm-hmm. So they operated as a cartel and influenced the money markets greatly. Now, Lincoln, needing money to prosecute a war, went to these bankers in New York and said, I'd like to borrow
some money.
So
they
can outfit my army.
At 20%, right? Or
24%.
24%.
Yeah.
Could you imagine 24% interest in 1860?
Right. Lincoln said, I face two great enemies, you know, one in my front and one in the rear. One I fear the most is the one in the rear.
The bankers.
Yeah. So he called up a general, I want to say Taylor was his last name, from the War of 1812. This guy's still kicking around 50 years later. And asked him, how did you guys do it in the War of 1812? And he goes, oh, that was easy. We just issued treasury notes, treasury paper.
We just issued our paper.
Yeah, straight from the treasury. He's like, oh, well, I guess I could do that. And he did. Ike had done it, that's for sure.
Ike did it too?
Ike did it, yeah, for the interstate. He funded the whole interstate with U.S. notes.
But back then, so when Ike did the interstate, it wasn't all digital? I mean, he actually created U.S. notes?
Yeah, $5, $2 U.S. notes.
Darn. So how did that work? He created them at the Treasury and just spent them into circulation?
That's it. Built his interstate.
I'll be darned.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's different, of course.
Of course.
Yeah, where they would, the Treasury would create an IOU, the New York Federal Reserve, private bankers would give them the money, or somebody else would give them the money, China or somebody like that, and then they would pay digitally. But he actually created U.S. notes. Have you seen any of those? Have you have any?
Have I seen them? I'm trying to buy them all. I have as many as I could get. I have boxes of them. Yeah.
So why didn't they try?
I used them as a bookmark. My first edition of The Secret World of Money came with a bookmark in the form of a U.S. note.
Hmm.
And if you bought the original book, and I think it was $9.95 on Amazon at the time, it was the bestseller in 1997, in fact, on Amazon. I still have my plaque. It came with an original, uncirculated U.S. note, which today is worth more than the cost of the book. So it paid for itself.
Why didn't the boys try to potshot Ike for doing that if they did all the other guys?
Yeah, right. Why didn't they? It turns out Ike's endeavor was very small, and they just hoped that it would pass and never
get noticed.
Nobody
would notice, right. Yeah.
But Kennedy, took it to the next gear. Although Ike issued the U.S. notes, and they were authorized at the time up to $300 million, the comptroller of the currency and all the other people in the administration that dealt with the banks were very friendly to the banks. But once Kennedy got in, he appointed James J. Saxon. This guy was he absolutely hated these national banks and did everything he could to thwart their power and to put the emphasis on state banks, giving them more power, let them do the same things that the owners of the Federal Reserve could do.
So you told us that Mr. Kennedy, the president at the time, saw a whole bunch of silver sitting in the basement.
Yeah.
And said,
what's all this silver?
Yeah.
We bought it all with these treasury notes in McKinley's day, and it piled up in the basement.
And then
we left it there, and nobody wanted to use it. And Kennedy said, well, then strike up silver, print up silver certificates.
Oh.
They might not use the coins, but they'll sure use the certificates. And sure enough, boy, those silver certificates flooded the marketplace. And Series 1957, and that's what he used between that, the silver certificates, and the U.S. notes. Oh, goodness, he came up with $500 million, which in those days was real money. Today, of course, it'd be $500 billion today.
Yeah. So,
And interestingly enough,
There
was a subcommittee that worked on this JFK assassination
that
focused on how the FBI and CIA were involved. Do you know who headed that subcommittee?
George W. Bush.
No, a guy named Gary Hart. Do you remember that guy?
Oh, Gary, I got caught on my yacht with a girl, Hart.
That's him.
That's him.
Yes, that was his reward.
What do you mean his reward? Are you saying his reward to be able to be president?
Well, his reward for revealing the hands in the cookie jar of the JFK assassination, because the work done by Gary Hart's subcommittee focusing on how the FBI and CIA were involved is one that revealed all of these interesting connections between the CIA and Lee Harvey Oswald, and the FBI and Lee Harvey Oswald. And so his reward for revealing all of this was, of course, I got caught on my yacht with a girl. Yeah.
Wait, suddenly we decided. I lost you there.
Hey, he was totally discredited and flushed out of public service.
Oh, I see. His reward for not doing that. Oh,
yes.
Sorry.
All right.
Sorry. You know, I'm just
slight.
I need a cup of coffee. I don't have one. I gotcha. Okay. So his reward was, we'll follow you around with a camera and catch you doing
something
with a young girl.
And then
boom,
put your butt out of
office. You're gone. Yeah, he was going to win that thing, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was.
He was getting close to win that thing.
He was, yeah.
Man. Well, it's a dirty business, Mr. G. You got to have a lot of Miracle 2 soap after you get involved with politics.
And then the other one was Richard Schweiker. Remember him, Schweiker?
No, I don't know him.
Yeah, he was a Pennsylvania congressman, I believe, not a senator. Yeah, Congressman Richard Schweiker. And he was the one that really said that the Warren Commission was a bunch of hoey.
He didn't use that term. But
no, he said, let's see, what did he say? I got that somewhere. Hold on.
Let me read this email.
Something like it collapsed like a cheap, no, like a house of cards. That was it.
House of cards. Here's Jeff's. Jeff is writing. I'm guessing a great deal of the JFK archive dump tomorrow will be blacked out, but that's not even counting what Nixon burned and the FBI and the CIA incinerated. And don't forget, someone might have done the Sandy Berger pants trick. What's he talking there, Sandy Berger?
Remember Sandy Berger? No. Well, he was a national security advisor under Bill Clinton, and he got caught smuggling things out of the National Archives in his pants.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
He never went to jail.
No.
Yeah, it was okay.
And then, of course, we have the connection between Watergate and JFK and President Nixon, too.
Absolutely.
Whoa.
No, absolutely.
That's a big one, too. That's
what Nixon referred to as the whole Bay of Pigs thing.
Really?
And the Cuban exiles that were engaged in both Watergate cover-up and the CIA assassination of John Kennedy. Ooh, did I just say that?
Yes,
you did.
You did.
They was the same guys. It was
did I just say that? I said
it was the very same guys, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Have you seen where there's two different countries, Czechoslovakia, Austria, they both just elected a miniature Trump. Mm-hmm. This whole nationalism, borders.
I love nationalism.
It's really interesting. It's kind of in the water, isn't it?
Yeah, but if you think about it, here we're going to take a leftist view of nationalism.
Okay. You're going to be a lefty for a minute?
For a minute.
Okay.
So I'm a nationalist. I believe that Americans are the best people on earth, that the country is the best country on earth, that we are superior to every other nation. And we're the best. America's the best. That's my belief, right? I'm a nationalist. Now, if I remove the word America and put in the word whites, then what I'm saying is racist. It's racist. So I'm discriminating against all other races when I say that white people are the best and white people are white.
You would be a racist.
I would be a racist.
Yes, you would.
But why is that different if I'm a nationalist? If I'm saying Americans are superior to every other country, doesn't that make me a nationalist / racist? So isn't that just as bad because I discriminate against other countries? I don't think that their country is the best. I don't think that their people are the best. I must be sick to think that way, that I don't give equal treatment to someone from another country, that I don't respect their flag, and I don't respect their culture. I respect American culture, and I think it's superior. So that makes me some sort of a discriminator, a bigot, right? That's what I am. I'm a nationalist.
So that's the meme that they sell President Trump.
Correct, on,
right?
Correct.
That
you can't
a bigot,
be a nationalist.
He's a bigot. Everybody else is bad, and blah, 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 blah.
Mayor de Blasio says to the New York City firemen, oh, look, you can't drive around your fire truck with the American flag hanging off the back.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that suggests that America's the best. And you're reminding all of these people from other countries that their country isn't flying their flag on the back
and
of
that's
your fire
not,
truck.
That's
so
not
do
nice.
Me a favor.
Yeah.
Take those flags off of your fire trucks.
Oh.
The American flag. Take it off of your fire trucks. Now, of course, firemen, being rank-and-file nationalists, what do they know? Just like the people of the day in the 50s and 60s who would say things like, whites are superior. They had no idea that their thinking was flawed and that they were somehow being politically incorrect. They were just sharing their feelings. And so this is what they're trying to do with the nationalist creed.
Ah.
Anyone who feels that way or thinks that way must be sick.
Mm-hmm.
If they really believe that Americans are better than everybody else.
Mm.
And America is the best country. Well,
you must be a curmudgeon.
You must be some sort of a
yeah.
bigot
mm-hmm.
if you think that way.
I never really looked at a point.
Well, there you go. There's
yeah.
our look from the left.
Look from the left. I see. Well, you certainly get that. I mean, on Facebook, I see it on even on my Facebook page when I even get anywhere near saying that, you know, President Trump's doing okay. And boy, I tell you what, it's like, it's almost like I, you know.
He insulted somebody.
Like, you know, I said yeah. something like, you know, Tom Cruise is tall or something. I mean, give me a break.
Yeah.
yeah, pretty interesting. Hi, this is for Andy. When I was a kid, stamp collecting used to be a big thing.
That's right.
With the elimination of personal mail, I never hear of stamps being collected and only imagine the difficulty of trying to sell a stamp to anyone
That's right.
under the age of 40. Is it possible that with the reduction in uses of physical money, you know where he's going here. Is it
sure.
possible that the reduction of the use of physical money, the collecting of coins will go down a path of valuing like to know how the market is? Let's see. I would like to know how the market is and how it is developing for antique coins such as Roman, Greek, Spanish, Venetian coins, especially the coins with dubious gold or silver content.
Yeah, well, the ones with dubious gold or silver content, of course... questionable is a good word. That precious metal content, of course, will always make them precious. And there is a big market for ancient coins and coins of other countries. You know, the numismatists in Switzerland collect Swiss coins. And, the Swiss Numismatic Society is a very big organization, but it deals with Swiss coins in Switzerland. Same with the Germans. Same with the French. And in the United States, of course, we have the largest numismatic market. The Chinese are really starting to get into theirs now.
Oh, really?
So the idea that money, of course, will always, in the various forms of money, will always be part of our culture, I think will continue. And the more we move towards this electronic money, the more people will appreciate old, tangible money. As for what happened to the stamps... You know what happened to the stamp market?
No.
The United Nations happened to the stamp
market. Oh, they're always fun.
So once we gave the United Nations franking privilege, you know what that means? Where
no.
the United Nations was allowed to print its own stamps and stick them on its own letters and put them in the it's sort of like they were given the power to print money at the expense of the postal service. So the UN was given a subsidy that was paid for by the Postal Service. And, you know, you would think that the UN would just start mailing a bunch of letters, but what they did instead was start making collector stamps and selling them sheets at a time to collectors. And they just flooded the marketplace with so many issues that pretty soon they killed it. They killed the market dead by using their franking privilege. And the difference between a coin and a stamp is a stamp is only paper. And again, there's counterparty risk. There's a promise to pay something later, which is the ability to mail a letter. And once they broached the collector market, however, then it became a question of, well, how much can collectors stand? And it seemed like they were doing 12 to 15, a new issue every month. And pretty soon, they literally killed the marketplace. There was so much supply that it dwarfed the demand, and the next thing you know, it's over. So collector stamps, real ones, from the Civil War right up to the age of Roosevelt, Franklin, are still very collectible and worth quite a bit of money. And in fact, supply and demand dictate that market as well. But if you're a typical stamp collector who started in the 60s or the 50s, and the majority of your portfolio are these UN stamps, commemorating wildlife and various other things. The supplies are so enormous, and the demand just cannot meet the supplies. So for the most part, that entire marketplace is dead. So if you have a stamp collection that was started before 1934 and is comprised of stamps issued before 1934, well, yeah, you have something that's worth something and will continue to appreciate in value. But if you have something that was put together later, most likely you're packed full of UN stamps that are much more supply than there is demand.
Andrew Goss is here every Wednesday. He's a currency historian and a nationally recognized one at that, expert on the United States monetary system. He has two books, Secret World of Money, Uncle Sam Cooks, the books, great books, and also a new one coming out, The Monetary History of the United States. He buys and sells gold coins for a living. And Gil writes in from Phoenix, I understand Andrew's love of gold and silver coins, and oh, I am a customer. But I was wondering if he would give listeners some other ideas on investment opportunities today other than gold and silver coins.
No, I don't. I am not comfortable in any other field.
You're so on the sidelines.
That's it.
If you're not going to buy.
Just not comfortable. Haven't added a single share of stock in a year.
Haven't you?
Haven't added a new piece of real estate in a year. In fact, in the last year, I've sold a piece of real estate. So I don't, there's nothing that I'm comfortable with investing now. I used to say Apple, not anymore. I used to say, well, the things they call the FANG stocks now. We talked about it. I used to say Tesla. You remember Tesla?
I remember.
But he's
doing some weird things, too. They're in some big trouble, aren't they?
They are in big trouble. Yeah. Even, you know, they cannot produce enough cars to break even. So there are cracks in the wall in the stock market. You certainly wouldn't catch me miles away from the bond market. The only thing I can say is tangibles, and the only tangibles that I'm expert in are numismatics. One of my clients recently shared with me the purchase of an antique guitar. Another shared with me the purchase of an automobile, a 63 Cadillac. So these
people that know that field, they can make money with it.
Yeah, they can buy these things and hold them just as I do with the coins. But all of my investment suggestions are going to be fixed supply tangibles that increase in demand, and you take physical possession of. So not a good source for alternate investments than what I specialize in, and that's what I know about. And, you know, my philosophy is put all your eggs in one basket and then watch that basket. So the bulk of my wealth is in numismatic coins, and I don't see that changing in my lifetime.
And why'd you jump off the apple cart, so to speak?
Well, because they hit their wall of resistance. You know, they cannot continue along this path. It's just not possible.
Well, the entire model didn't make sense to me of getting millions of people to get the next iPhone just because it's got more doodads.
Right.
You know, and they did a lot of that. They were selling the same. I saw some numbers. They were selling a lot to same customers that people were just getting a new one just because it was cool. How long can that last? And maybe that is starting to die a little bit.
Yeah.
People are saying, no, wait a minute, I don't need another, spend another $700 or whatever they charge for these things. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, I think there's going to be a tax deal with lowering the corporate rates.
No.
It's going to get done this year?
No.
Man, really?
Yeah, no.
Portique? Oh, just because?
Just because, man.
Politics.
There are those in Washington that would rather burn the whole town down than to let Donald Trump succeed in any form.
Burn it down, right?
And burn it to the ground before they let him succeed.
Yeah.
Starting with John McCain, still smarting at his defeat in the primaries. Still smarting.
Boy.
And, you know, how come Trump could do it and he couldn't? You know, he couldn't mobilize the Republican Party behind him, but yet Trump did it. You know, so that, that dichotomy I don't think will change.
888-663-6386, email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. Sylvie writes in, how many gallons of gas sold in the U.S. each day and guesstimates of federal taxes collected? You don't have that handy, do you?
What's the question?
How many gallons of gas are sold in the United States each day and the amount of taxes collected on that.
Oh, yeah. You could probably
Where are they going? But you could probably Google that, Sylvia, and find out.
Sure. And I know where you're going is the idea that all of this gas tax money, which is separate from the income tax money, is supposed to be dedicated to infrastructure repair, but instead it's not. It's just thrown into the tax pile with all the other collections that the Treasury makes and spent on something other than fixing our roads. So
that's the whole idea. Well, here you go. I just Google it. 2016, 143 billion gallons of gasoline, finished motor gasoline, were consumed in the United States.
Last year, maybe.
This is from EIA.gov. Last year, that's correct. Or about 33.41 billion barrels of, is that oil? I don't know. But anyway, 143 billion a year, 150 billion a year. That's a lot of money. Where does that money go? Where does it go?
Into the general treasury.
Oh, they just pile it in there.
Yep. So we're waiting, yes, for our Kennedy papers, right?
Tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
There was a phone call between President Johnson and Hoover.
Oh, you're such a stickler for details.
The day after the assassination, yeah, right? So the next day.
Yeah.
And that's when Hoover said, well, you know, Oswald was in Mexico City and there was an impersonator there that was attempting to be him. So there was somebody in Mexico City claiming to be Lee Harvey Oswald, but the images don't match the guy that we saw.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that tape was mysteriously erased.
Oh, was it?
But yet included in these files is a transcript of the phone call. And then there was a cable.
Oh, we want to read that.
Yes, we do. Then there was a cable from the headquarters back to the president, and one of the officers that actually signed the cable said in 1995 at that hearing, which, if you recall, that's what caused all of this free the files thing, mm-hmm. which was the hearings in 95, you know, that something wasn't being released. So he wrote at the bottom of his, he said to congressional testimony that I'm signing off on something that I know isn't true, and that there had been already an interest in Oswald that exceeded anything that they had seen before.
Wow.
And then, of course, the revelations in this, in these files of the CIA ownership of many of these so-called independent press people, such as the Miami Herald and the New Orleans Picayune and others.
Walter Cronkite.
Yes. Well, we already knew about that one, but this one is allegedly going to release more, a bigger list.
Oh, of people that they were on the payroll.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And then there was my interaction with Bob Groden, who I've talked about before, who was the photography expert brought in by the House Committee on Assassinations, who told me he's never been more scared in his life than sitting in that room, knowing that he was looking at faked photos. Well,
this was in Washington, D.C. The autopsy. Fake photos. Yeah. Wow.
Fake photos, and that they had been in the possession of the archives since they were taken, and they even had the autopsy photographer testify before the committee, the guy who took the pictures, and said essentially, "Those weren't the pictures I took." And then my favorite, of course, Operation Northwoods. Remember we talked about Northwoods?
Yeah, tell folks what that is.
Well, Northwoods was essentially where Pentagon proposed that we initiate a simulated or real attack on the United States and blame them on Castro and then invade Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
Operation Northwoods, in fact, precursor that many point to, for the 9/11 attacks. And this is the beginnings of these so-called false flag operations, where they do something. Remember the Maine? Sink a battleship and blame it on Spain. Well,
start a war, right?
Start a war, yeah. The Gulf of Tonkin incident. So the Operation Northwoods was the first time that this activity was released or revealed. And there's supposed to be a lot more in this paper dump of things for Northwoods.